It was the most difficult problem that Clyde had ever faced in his life. And there were no precedents that gave any help at all. Laura belonged to him. Everyone knew that. If his rival had been another villager or someone from any other part of Thalassa, he knew exactly what he would have done. But the laws of hospitality, and above all, his natural awe for anything of Earth, prevented him from politely asking Leon to take his attentions elsewhere. It would not be the first time that had happened, and there had never been the slightest trouble on those earlier occasions. That could have been because Clyde was over 6 feet tall, proportionally broad, and had no excess fat on his 190-pound frame. During the long hours at sea, when he had nothing else to do but to brood, Clyde toyed with the idea of a short, sharp bout with Leon. It would be very short, though Leon was not as skinny as most of the Earthmen. He shared their pale, washed-out look, and was obviously no match for anyone who led a life of physical activity. That was the trouble. It wouldn't be fair. Clyde knew that public opinion would be outraged if he had a fight with Leon, however justified he might be. And how justified was he? That was the big problem that worried Clyde, as it had worried a good many billion men before him. It seemed that Leon was now practically one of the family. Every time he called at the mayor's house, the Earthmen seemed to be there on some pretext or other. Jealousy was an emotion that had never afflicted Clyde before, and he did not enjoy the symptoms. He was still furious about the dance. It had been the biggest social event for years. Indeed, it was not likely that Palm Bay would ever match it again in the whole of its history. To have the president of Thalassa, half the council, and 50 visitors from Earth in the village at the same moment was not something that could happen again this side of eternity. For all his size and strength, Clyde was a good dancer, especially with Laura. But that night he had had little chance of proving it. Leon had been too busy demonstrating the latest steps from Earth. Latest, that is, if you overlooked the fact that they must have passed out of fashion 100 years ago, unless they had come back and were now the latest thing. In Clyde's opinion, Leon's technique was very poor, and the dances were ugly. The interest that Laura showed in them was perfectly ridiculous. He had been foolish enough to tell her so when his opportunity came, and that had been the last dance he had had with Laura that evening. From then onward, he might not have been there, as far as she was concerned. Clyde had endured the boycott as long as he could, then had left for the bar with one objective in mind. He had quickly attained it, and not until he had come reluctantly to his senses the next morning did he discover what he had missed. The dancing had ended early. There had been a short speech from the president, his third that evening, introducing the commander of the starship and promising a little surprise. Captain Gold had been equally brief. He was obviously a man more accustomed to orders than orations. "Friends," he began, "you know why we're here, and I've no need to say how much we appreciate your hospitality and kindness. We shall never forget you, and we're only sorry that we have had so little time to see more of your beautiful island and its people. I hope you will forgive us for any seeming discourtesy, but the repair of our ship and the safety of our companions has had to take priority in our minds. In the long run, the accident that brought us here may be fortunate for us both. It has given us happy memories and also inspiration. What we have seen here is a lesson to us. May we make the world that is waiting at the end of our journey as fair a home for mankind as you have made Thalassa. And before we resume our voyage, it is both a duty and a pleasure to leave with you all the records we can that will bridge the gap since you last had contact with Earth. Tomorrow we shall invite your scientists and historians up to our ship so that they can copy any of our information tapes they desire. Thus we hope to leave you a legacy which will enrich your world for generations to come. That is the very least we can do. But tonight, science and history can wait, for we have other treasures aboard. Earth has not been idle in the centuries since your forefathers left. Listen now to some of the heritage we share together, and which we will leave upon Thalassa before we go our way." The lights had dimmed. The music had begun. No one who was present would ever forget that moment. In a trance of wonder, Laura had listened to what men had wrought in sound during the centuries of separation. Time had meant nothing. She had not even been conscious of Leon standing by her side, holding her hand as the music ebbed and flowed around them. These were the things that she had never known, the things that belonged to Earth and to Earth alone. The slow beat of mighty bells, climbing like invisible smoke from old cathedral spires, the chant of patient boatmen in a thousand tongues now lost forever, rowing home against the tide in the last light of day, the songs of armies marching into battles that time had robbed of all their pain and evil. The merged murmur of 10 million voices as man's greatest cities woke to meet the dawn. The cold dance of the aurora over endless seas of ice. The roar of mighty engines climbing upward on the highway to the stars. All these she had heard in the music and the songs that had come out of the night. Songs of distant earth, carried to her across the light years. A clear soprano voice, swooping and soaring like a bird at the very edge of hearing, sang a wordless lament that tore at the heart. It was a dirge for all loves lost in the loneliness of space, for friends and homes that could never again be seen and must fade at last from memory. It was a song for all exiles, and it spoke as clearly to those who were sundered from Earth by a dozen generations as to the voyagers to whom its fields and cities still seemed only weeks away. The music had died into the darkness, misty-eyed, avoiding words. The people of Thalassa had gone slowly to their homes. But Laura had not gone to hers. Against the loneliness that had pierced her very soul, there was only one defense, and presently she had found it, in the warm night of the forest, as Leon's arms tightened around her, and their souls and bodies merged. Like wayfarers lost in a hostile wilderness, they had sought warmth and comfort beside the fire of love. While that fire burned, they were safe from the shadows that prowled in the night, and all the universe of stars and planets shrank to a toy that they could hold within their hands. To Leon, it was never wholly real. Despite all the urgency and peril that had brought them here, he sometimes fancied that at journey's end it would be hard to convince himself that Thalassa was not a dream that had come in his long sleep. This fierce and foredoomed love, for example, he had not asked for it. It had been thrust upon him. Yet there were few men, he told himself, who would not have taken it, had they too landed after weeks of grinding anxiety on this peaceful, pleasant world.